Hello, and welcome to another edition of Lodging on Demand. In this episode, Lodging Editor-in-Chief Dennis Nessler sits with Brian Quinn, Chief Development Officer at Sonesta Hotels International, and Tim Muir, Chief Development Officer at TPG Hotels and Resorts, to discuss the recent interest rate cuts and their potential impact on transactions. The development veterans also address new build activity and what they see ahead for the rest of the year and for 2025.
Hi, this is Dennis Nessler, Editor-in-Chief of Lodging Magazine. Welcome to our podcast today. We are going to talk a little bit about interest rates and the recent cuts and what that impact will be on development for the hotel universe. We have a couple of experts with us today to discuss it. We have Brian Quinn, Chief Development Officer for Sonesta International Hotels, and we have Tim Muir, Chief Development Officer for TPG Hotels and Resorts. Welcome, boys.
Thank you.
Nice to be welcome, Dennis. Good to see you, Brian.
See you, Tim.
So, guys, let's get right into it. What do you think the impact will be? Transaction activity has been pretty much stalled for the last couple of years. The Fed cut interest rates by 50 basis points, possibly some more cuts coming down the line. Do you think this is going to have a material impact? Brian, you want to start?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, look, it was. I would say that the Fed was a bit late. I wish they would have done the first cut in August, especially after the assassination attempt and the trade out of Biden and Harris, just to keep the consumer sort of in line and continuing to spend. Cuts are better than increases. You know, that rate changes a lot of things. Lower borrowing costs, hopefully a boost or a stabilization in consumer spending. You know, easier refinancing options, but we need, you know, some consecutive cuts in order for the market to form back up in a way where it unlocked the transactions. You know, we're on the right path. I mean, it's the first cut in 4 years, but the high rates and this impacted Tim's side of the business and mine, you know, had a dramatic reduction in the trades, right? The bid and the ask was off anyway. The market was stabilizing post the pandemic, and then to have the increase in rates really, you know, sort of gummed up the
interest
works.
Rates, I like Brian said, I'd like to see a second and third cut, and you got to see transactions. We're not seeing enough transactions between buyer and seller. You know, things are moving slowly. I'm an optimistic person, but what my experience tells me is we need more, and I think we'll hopefully see that in 25 and 26.
Yeah, I think Tim's spot on. You have a dynamic where the high rates coupled with the supply chain issues and the inflation really forestalled a lot of new construction. And then on the trade, you know, when the trades happen, you know, think about what that transaction does for our industry, right? So you have a buyer and a seller, right? So you've got everyone that's supporting that transaction rewarded in the system. And then also that's when the brand changes happen. That's when the PIPs get done. That's when the refis get done. All of that was also stalled. So the path we're on to a reduction in the interest rates will help both the new construction side and the trade side. But borrowing costs were just so out of whack. And then, as I mentioned, coupled with the inflation around the new construction expense and the tail end of the supply chain issues really just created a dynamic where there was an explosive growth. I think as a brand company, you know, it's incumbent on us to continue to look at the standards and look at the prototypes and come to market with products that make sense. And everyone is value engineering because, you know, the only way we're going to unlock the growth potential that we all know exists, right? We've lived through some of the other cycles, is that you've got to get the cost down to a point where the returns are there, the flow throughs are there to attract the equity so they can get the return. And so debt has the confidence to put the money out the door.
Yeah. What areas of construction costs are really where you are seeing the most inflation? Is there anything specific in terms of materials or labor, or what are you guys seeing there?
So I'm seeing a 10% higher cost on the hard cost. So on the bids that we're getting from the contractors, so you look at your hard, your soft, your FF&E, and your land, construction costs, you know, have gone up considerably in the last couple of years. And just comparing to some of the properties we broke ground in 2023 and what we broke ground in 2024, it's about 10% more than what it was in 2023. So
yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, we're doing a significant renovation rollout across the U.S. Put out about $600 million over the next 36 months to renovate the hotels. And one dynamic, two green shoots here. One is, I think the contractors, the vendors, the suppliers, they understand we're in a constrained environment, that we've stretched outside the normal business model. So when we've gone back and asked them to sharpen the pencil and help us look at the VE potential, they've been more open to that conversation than maybe a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, where they were just pushing back. They were so busy and everybody was ramping back up that there really wasn't an ability to have that conversation. And that conversation is happening. And we have seen a few projects be rebid where some elements have come down. I think around labor, we're going to see a little bit of negotiation and a little bit of buying power coming to the developer. Just as unemployment softens just a bit, I don't think it's going to soften much. But you know, we've got to bring all the skill sets to the projects to figure out how to make them go projects if we want to grow. And I was just finishing up a session around the consumer here in West Palm Beach, and you know, the consumer wants new, whether it's newly renovated or new product, and the consumer has changed, right? They're sensitive to design, to music, to beverage, to experiential, and we've got to pull that through the hotels. And that costs money, you know, to Tim's point. So we've got to figure out a way to be able to execute on it. The other thing that the drop in rates does do is it creates a boost in consumer spending usually, and some confidence, you know, for the consumer to continue to go out and buy lodging, which is critical, especially as we wiggle through the next, you know, 45 to 75 days to get through the election. But, you know, money is not cheap right now.
Looking, I know it's been largely a conversion market, you know, in terms of growth for the last few years. You know, do you see that changing at all anytime soon, or kind of status quo right there?
So, if you look at the last couple of years, like 21, 22 was more of a seller's market than a buyer's market. New construction, you know, deals are getting done, but they're getting done at a different cap stack of 40% equity. The bank or the lending relationships are typically someone with, you have a long relationship with, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. You know, we're still building. But we're building one or two properties a year, probably, rather than six or seven. Mm-hmm. I do see it as the market kind of shifting now, coming into a buyer's market more than a seller's market. I think the biggest challenge that we've had is buyer and seller couldn't agree on price, and that's why they haven't had a lot of transactions. Although deals are getting done, I like to see it at a higher scale. I think the industry is good. When brokers are busy, banks are lending money, developers are building, and markets are growing. But a couple of things have to fall into each bucket. The transaction bucket, I would say, would be one. Lower debt would be number two. And construction costs drop, or at least sharpening the pencil where we could get better bids, you know, more competitively in markets that we want to build. So those three things, when they align, it'll accelerate growth. And, you know, right now, like, nothing in the business moves quick. They typically move in cycles. But, you know, I think we're headed in the right direction. In the last 2 years, we probably underwrote maybe 150 deals, came across our desk, and we probably transacted on 5%, you know, which it's not bad. But we've been swinging at a lot of pitches. You just have to remain patient, stick to the fundamentals. Let the market come to you. Don't press, you know, where it's not there. And I think in the next 12 to 18 to 24 months, we'll be in a different cycle, and the conversation we're having today will be a lot different.
Yeah, I agree with Tim. I think, you know, hiring a company like Tim's, having a professional operator, is becoming more and more critical, right? There's a science and an art to hospitality, but more and more around the tech pack and around customer acquisition and scale, having, you know, a great operator is critical to hitting your flow throughs and hitting your returns. I think it's incumbent on the brands to also, you know, take the standards manual out and take a look at it, right? You know, because we're an owner and operator as well, and have that owner's lens to franchising, you know, we don't think it's right to put a standards manual out that says, create a living wall at your front desk, and on page 26 of the standards manual say, keep pests and rodents out of the hotel, right? Those two things are in conflict.
Yeah.
So let's be rational with the standards. Let's not ask our operator partners and our development partners to spend money on things that aren't critical. But the things that are mission critical, again, I think it is design, it's beverage, it's music, it's experiences. People are managing and expecting different things from their time when they're on the road. And if you deliver on them, you'll get a rate premium. I think, you know, Tim and I have been at this for a while. This is the first time that the equity and debt recognizes the power of a lot of the hotels that Tim's group runs in that upscale lifestyle and luxury space. They're giving you upside because they know you can drive rate in that space if you've got the design right, if you've got the food and beverage offering right, if you're in the right places. If there's a reason to stay there Wednesday and Thursday, but also a reason to stay there Friday and Saturday. And those hotels will win. And you know, that was not always the case. The debt and equity didn't really understand that space, and it took a lot of effort and time. But if you look at what continues to perform well, that higher tier continues to perform well. You know, if you look at the wealth effect in the top 15%, did very well through equities and through the post-pandemic period here. They want to travel, but they have pretty high expectations on the road. So our products like the James and Royal Sonesta and Classico really sensitive to making sure we're meeting the consumer. And that's a good place to spend money. Not necessarily a good place to spend money. You don't need to put a framed picture of Tim or I in your lobby in order to be a great hotel. You need to make sure you're taking care of what the consumer needs.
But it would make you smile every day. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your time today and your insights. A lot of great takeaways from this, and really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis. Good to see you, Tim.
Good to see you, Brian. Bye-bye.
We'll see you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Lodging on Demand. If you would like more content like this, please subscribe to Lodging Magazine on YouTube. You can also subscribe to Lodging on Demand wherever you get your podcasts. For news and updates, follow at Lodging Magazine on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and X. Or visit us at lodgingmagazine.com.